40-year-old Olivia Alejandra Negrete. Quiroz and Martin lived in the apartment with Nadia Vera. Negrete worked there as a housekeeper. The attackers reportedly sexually tortured at least two of the women. Mexico City District Attorney Rodolfo Rios Garza says all lines of investigation are open. But in his first press conference on the case, he did not mention that two of the victims had left Veracruz due to fear.
¡Viva la libertad de expresión!
Journalists and human rights activists across Mexico are calling for justice and a serious, transparent investigation, something that almost never happens when journalists or activists are murdered here. But Ricardo González of Article 19 says the scope of the crime has shaken people beyond the victims' professional and social circles.
The fact that five persons were found dead in a relatively calm and safe neighborhood in Mexico City is actually a shocking news for, you know, the common citizen. And now, added to the fact that they were, you know, facing threats from the government from Veracruz, that's also shocking because it's the first time that we see that kind of violence here in Mexico City. People were under the assumption that Mexico City, despite of the many problems they have, it was actually a safe city. And now the reality is catching up with us.
Mexico City's investigative bureau announced Thursday it had filed charges of homicide, femicide, and aggravated robbery against a suspect in the case. A 41-year-old ex-convict, the district attorney said, had confessed to participating in the crime and knowing the other men involved. According to Article 19, Ruben Espinosa is the 13th journalist from Veracruz murdered during Governor Javier Duarte's administration. He's the second killed outside of Veracruz this year, after the murder of Armando Saldaña in Cosolapa, Oaxaca, in May. Three other journalists in the state are disappeared. It's now up to Mexico City authorities to demonstrate if they're willing to seriously pursue the documented harassment of at least two of the victims, or if they'll continue the established practice of chalking up the murders of journalists and activists to random acts of crime. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zur, Rosalind Scott, Ken Jones, Andrew Geller, and Eric Takeoff. The producer is Ethan Martin. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Rosalind Scott.
And I'm Ken Jones. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO Community Radio at 7 a.m., it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with hosts Abe and Joe. At 9, Paul Cienfuegos will talk about local governance. He's a leader in the community rights movement, which works to dismantle corporate constitutional so-called rights and assert the people's inherent right to self-government. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. News, views, and commentary from Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints out of KPFA in Berkeley with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 a.m. on stage and studio, the guest is Chitra Viragavan talking about her debut novel, The Americans. This is the story of Tara, a single Indian woman in her mid-30s who travels to America to look after her teenage niece while her sister Kamala is dealing with her autistic son's treatment. And on Art Focus at 11:30 a.m., host Joseph Galavan's guest will be Yael Amir of New Space Center for Photography and Oregon Historical Society's Matthew Cowan. They'll be talking about Unearthed, hand-colored slides of early 20th century Portland gardens from the Oregon Historical Society. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth, which covers last week's Black Lives Matter Council in Portland. Good night, Rosalind.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Danielle.
K
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A Black Lives Matter conference was held over the weekend in Portland to commemorate the death of an unarmed Michael Brown at the hands of Ferguson, Missouri police officer Darren Wilson 1 year ago. That event galvanized the national Black Lives movement, and on Saturday, at the First Unitarian Church in Portland, a conference was held where panelists answered questions regarding their areas of expertise. The first panel specialized in business models for Black communities that are regularly left out of urban renewal projects and have much higher rates of poverty than other ethnicities. KBOO's Ethan Martin was there on Saturday recording the event. KBOO co-manager Mike Crenshaw was there as MC and organizer of the event. He asked the first panel the question, "How does your business model within the community support the community, promote engagement, and achieve success?" This first answer comes from Royal Harris, a Portland businessman and entrepreneur who works with the Black community. In 2013, his brother Duriel Harris was shot and killed outside a nightclub in Portland.
I'm going to preface this saying, as a business major, I got all kind of nerdy stuff in my head right now. But if I take it organic, what I would say the best business model, and I think the business model that even young people see, is you find a need, you govern a group to create those resources, and then you work with each other. Well, that's the entrepreneurship. But also there's another model that I wholeheartedly believe in. When you know where opportunity is, you tell people what it is, you thoroughly prepare them for success in the opportunity. I never use the word ready, because ready is kind of like, I could be ready to eat a cheeseburger. If I haven't went out and earned the money to buy it, I'm not prepared to eat a cheeseburger. So we must prepare our employable youth. And then the most important thing is this, to empower them. It's funny, as I sit here today and I think about economic empowerment from an African-American perspective, this lady over here in the back, she can't see me because she's looking at him doing that, but her son actually is an electrician now, am I right? And the reason her son is an electrician, I did a presentation at Self-Enhancement, and her son let me know he took calculus in high school and got an A. At the time I'm working for a pre-apprenticeship program, I made three calls. One to the lead coordinator for entry into the union, one to a friend who was in charge of the Black network that supported union members, and to her son, telling him specifically what to do and what to say to take advantage of the opportunity. Here's the interesting thing. I did all this for him. It took me a year and 2 months to figure out his name. It took me a year and 7 months to figure out I've known his mom my whole life. Because it was never about anything other than a young person who had prepared himself for opportunity that he was, him and his community were not part of the discussion about. That's the key. That's the business model. As adults, as people who have social networks, as people who have professional networks, we tell our kids what prepares them to be globally competitive. And notice, I didn't say locally, I didn't say Burger King ready. As African Americans, we can't continue to apologize or feel we don't have the right to say, I don't care if my kid can compete with the kids at Lake Oswego High School, I really could care less. My main goal is that you're globally competitive, because we live in a global marketplace now. These are the discussions, this is the poverty of content that communities of colors have. Now, within a Latino community, hey, there's a global perspective. How many people realize that in the Western Hemisphere, English is not the most popular language for African Americans? Does anybody know what it is? What do you say, ma'am? No. Portuguese. There are over 90 million people of African descent in Brazil. There are over 180 million people of African descent in Central and South America. So there's a global marketplace for people of color. We condition our kids to, are you good at Portland Public Schools? Well, Portland Public Schools suck. So why would I want my kid to compete with the guy who finished fourth? As a community, why are we asking what the schools should do? As individuals, how many people out here want their kids in a fourth-rate school? The reality is this. If you don't want your kid there, the kid who's working in healthcare, the IT guy, your banker, the individual who's doing your loan or building an apartment that you can invest in, you want them to be talented too. Structural racism exists as long as people don't say, the guy who I don't know should have that same equal opportunity as me.
The same question, how does your business model within the community support the community and achieve success, was answered by Maria Damaris, musician with Portland Latin music band Bajos Salarios, which means poor wages. The band raises awareness about Hispanic identity and community.
I guess the best model for me that we have created, and let me just emphasize, we create musicians. We make musicians out of anything. We have changed and revolution how music and art is seen and viewed by white people, which is my first experience. We say, if you can walk, you can dance, if you can talk, you can sing. You don't need permission from anyone, and you don't need anyone or idol contest to tell you that you have to do it this way. Pretty much we have created everything, you know, as people of colors and immigrants, mostly women led, you know, out of a model of, you know, collectively, and we have been able not only to inspire, you know, hundreds of musicians locally, but we also have talent to play music, and now they can go on to, you know, some of them they want to be superstars, some of them they want to sell music, some of them they want to create bands. We call it is the movement, is the labor, social, and racial movement, which, you know, you don't need to have a band. You just need to join the movement and play music to raise awareness through music. But we have a lot of people who have left the band to do their own things, and we're happy that we planted the seed. The name of our band is Bajo Salario, which means crappy wages. And we wanted to emphasize in low wages name because we wanted to be a model to the community that you don't need to make a lot of money to be a decent, respectful, responsible human being. That you can be the best father, the best sister, the best brother, the best mom, regardless of your income. Because the most important things in life, the values and the principles, your parents taught it to you, or your neighbor, or your teacher, whoever was the mentor in your life, give it to you for free and taught it to you with love and because they care. So we also do a lot of exchange. So we tell them, we'll go and play to your event, just give us food. And that's all they do. You know, we don't drink, we don't smoke. Some people do, but our belief is that we have noticed and we have proven that when people have music in their lives and community, that you are less likely to shop and buy and fall into the American dream. And believe me, a lot of the Latinos come to the United States with the American dream as a goal. So when they realize that they have to have 2, 3, 4 jobs and many of their family members will be deported and all these things, and so we have been able to model that you can make income, low income, you know, job like me. Most of our members in our band are teachers, and we live in poverty. That's why we are supporting Don't Shoot on 15 now, because, you know. But even if you make $15 an hour, if you're a single mom like me, it's very hard to make ends meet. However, we have proven that when you have music, every corner of this world is on a stage. Every person can play music. Then you'll see that people are richer and happier because they have music, art, and community to connect in a daily basis. So you don't need to buy anything.
The next panelist was asked the same question, how does your business model within the community support the community and achieve success? It was answered by Andrew Colas, a young information technologies entrepreneur who works with the Hispanic community.
I would like to say that, you know, research has shown that a diverse team helps in a dynamic problem-solving environment. It's proof in the pudding, so to speak. And I encourage everyone to, you know, going back to the original question of, like, you know, business models and things of that nature, I'm a big fan of TED Talk, so I'm a kind of a nerd out on TED Talk, but, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but his name is Navi Radhouj, last name R-A-D-J-O-U, and he's got this TED Talk, it's called Creative Problem Solving in the Face of Extreme Limits. creative problem solving in the face of extreme limits. And I would say that as far as a business model, this TED Talk is amazing first and foremost, but frugal innovation. So he shows like how people, I think in like South Sudan or like Africa, use their bicycles to charge their cell phones. They get, there's a gentleman in India that has created an entire refrigerator out of clay that uses no electricity. Right? We don't need electricity for refrigerators anymore. So I think that's kind of what, you know, going back to cultural differences, art related projects, things of that nature, aesthetic and appealing. Has anyone ever heard of the Apple Newton? Okay. All right. Nerd power. It's okay. Most people have not heard of the Newton because it failed miserably, but Apple created it. And then along came this guy, Mr. Jobs. And you know, we have what we have today is what's the aesthetically appealing MacBook and Apple phone and things of that nature. So also, like, you know, from a fashionista model perspective, that's why Apple does so well. You know, it uses art innovation combined with technology, and I think that also included with that frugal innovation is definitely the course of the future to make sustainable projects.
Teresa Rayford, an organizer for Don't Shoot Portland, who headed the event on Saturday, also asked the question, what do you anticipate for black businesses in Portland, and what changes will benefit our youth positively? This question was answered by Royal Harris.
Okay, so how many people just got here? Okay, so all you new people, first, welcome. How you doing? Second of all, I'm not politically correct. So I'm gonna say this right now. For me, this discussion, I'm not caring about nobody else except black people. I respect everybody. I'm a native Oregonian. I love everybody from Oregon. At this moment, the urgency is understanding for black people, the opportunity has to be seized or you'll be squished out because it's about dollars. We can be all nice and fluffy and talk about unity and all that,